Hello and welcome to another episode of Can I Have It in Blue, a podcast about design, technology, product, and everything in between. I'm Joana Gomes, product designer at SubVisual, and together with me, as always, we have Jean Ferreira, CPO at SubVisual as well. And today, we're going to continue to talk about research, as we promised. And today, we are going to talk about planning and presenting user research. And how do you usually do it, Jean? Do you usually do a plan? Do you plan at all? Do you make a structured plan? How do you usually tackle the first steps of user research?
Hello, everyone. I think for us, it has been a very fluid process. There is a blueprint. When I talk about it, I typically say just we pick an A4 piece of paper, you draw like a grid where you draw lines between half of the page and you make four grids. And then put the big topics, like depending on what it is, of course, the project, that can be how they interact with products and what they have used before, current experiences, blah, blah, blah. You can have like big topics on these four grids, let's say. And then in those topics, we usually have kickstart questions. So how do I move from one topic to another? I usually write those questions so I know how to navigate from one topic to the other. And maybe I have some questions that I feel are interesting to repeat throughout all the interviews. But the most important thing for me is to be very open to follow along with what the person on the other side is saying. So it's about preparing. Of course, but I don't think we over-prepare. I think we prepare just enough that we can be comfortable in that conversation. And then the secret sauce for me is just curiosity and knowing how to navigate between the topics, knowing when you've drive that fountain and then you move to another one. That's for me how I kick off planning. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you could talk about the work we do before. So the design thinking frameworks we use, the assumptions, raising how my trees, and going through those, the hopes of like, what do we need to validate? What are we looking for in the interview? So that's even before what I was saying. But yeah, that's the usual process. Like, what do we need to learn? Who do we need to talk to? Because that's also a very important thing. And then when we go to those interviews, I feel like I just need to be comfortable enough that I can follow the conversation and lead the conversation, of course, in some topics, but then let the user guide me. If there's anything that pops up that feels like I can follow up, that I can go a bit deeper, I try to go through with that topic. I put my priorities second. If the user is very excited or very engaged in that topic, I'll let them, I'll keep on that topic for a while and only move to the other ones when I feel like, okay, we got something here and we can move on.
So you don't do a script at all?
We started doing those scripts. We started doing, the very much the 101 of things. I don't do scripts. I haven't done a script for a long time because I kind of just got comfortable. It was distracting me, the script. So we are talking about discovery. We are talking about generative research. We are talking about generating ideas, generating insights. Having a script for uncharted territory is weird. You are literally going into the unknown. So if you have a script, you're going to rip it in half in 10 minutes. So for me, it's like just being prepared to talk about that topic, being prepared to know there are these points that I would like to touch. And this is how I will navigate from one to the other. But then in the conversation, everything can flow more naturally if it's a conversation rather than me reading from a script like, okay, so I finished my five questions on this topic. Let's move. So I don't do that. Yeah. And for me, it just helps me a lot to be very, very free to go there. Yeah. And just one thing that is important for me is not taking, because I hate taking notes during these interviews. It distracts me. So anything that distracts me from the person talking and what they're saying, I try to avoid. I just try to remove. So as you know, we sometimes go in pairs, two people to the interview, so that one is, kind of keeping up the log of things and making sure we are not missing something. But the main question for me is like, we always record these interviews and that allows me to then go back and listen again and find out things. So I don't care that much about note-taking. I don't care that much about over-preparing. for me, the preparation comes from I want to go into an interview feeling really curious and knowing what I want to learn about. But then how much I'll learn about something depends a bit on the person on the other side. So you might have four topics and one person might be really involved in one and engaged in one of them and not so much on the others. And that's fine. I just let them let them express their thoughts and dive deeper if they want to. And then that's all good.
Okay. Yeah, I have a slightly different process. I'm not sure if it was you that shared one time an article with me. And since you or someone shared that with me, I usually follow this process and I think it helps a lot. It's an article, I think you can leave it in the episode links or whatever, an article from the People Nerds blog. The title is Not Sure Which User Research Methodology to Use, Start Here. And they have like a step-by-step process. And I've been following this process since the early days, since I started doing some user research. And it's, at least for me, it has been really helpful. Also, I don't use a script. Like you said, I tried it in the beginning and it is very distracting because you are trying to read and you are trying to speak with the person that is in front of you and you are trying to listen to the person. And it's really, really hard, at least for me, to do everything. So I usually follow these steps. And basically, it's kind of similar to what you do, but a little bit more structured. Basically, you define like a research statement. So there's something I want to know from my users. I can have like one or two goals, like one or two statements in that sentence or whatever, or in that statement. But usually it's a topic that I want to validate in those interviews. And then after this, you can define goals. And these goals are very, usually very similar in between projects. There is like, what is the process that you are following? What are the pains that you have been feeling? What current like similar products are you using to do this job? So it forces you to think more deeply on that first statement that you do, because you have like, I need to do this. Okay. I need to know this. Okay. So how can I break this into steps and into more specific topics that I need to understand from this user? It helps a lot because usually you find things and new questions that you can ask the user. So I kind of follow a more structured process, but it's kind of what you do. I don't have a script, but I try to follow these steps at least. And then this also helps me to really understand what kind of research do I need to do. For instance, there are times that you think you only need to do an usability test, but then you start thinking about your UI or your product or whatever, and sometimes questions arise that you say, okay, I need to dig deeper and understand why they are doing this. And it's not just a case of usability, it's also a case like you are trying to understand why they are doing this. So yeah, I think this has been helping me a lot. And of course, taking notes.
It's not good.
I love having someone else with me. And also, not only because of the notes, you know, like from my experience, there were times where I got a feeling from the interview and the person that was with me got different things from what I was getting. Like it understood what the user was saying in a different way or made questions, not made, but thought about other questions that I wasn't thinking when I was talking with them. And sometimes it's not that easy for you to, when you are talking to someone, to really, like, I think you really need to practice, like, doing a lot of interviews because it's not easy for you to uncover everything you need to know. Sometimes you are talking with someone, and that's one of the reasons I have this process because I don't have a great memory. So sometimes I'm speaking to someone and I'm in one topic and I need to have something that guides me to another topic. Otherwise, I may get in that rabbit hole and talk only about one thing. And I actually don't validate everything that I need to validate in that interview. So I need to have some structure, but not a lot of it.
Yeah. But that's my point is like, I have, okay, these are the four topics that I want to touch. They are similar, usually, as you're saying, like, okay, how is your day-to-day using this tool, depending if it's a tool that they are using or if it's something that we are trying to discover that's new. So as you know, we do a lot of products from the ground up. So typically we don't interview users, we interview our target audience. So how are you using this product is not the question that I can make usually. So what I usually do is, well, what are you using for this job to be done that we define this job to be done, you know, that we are trying to solve or that we're trying to work towards. And then based on that, I'll go a bit, okay, what are you using? What have you used before? Why did you choose this one over the others? If it's something that they can show me Like, can you show me how you use it? That would be great. You know, all that stuff. You just want to get to the real deal and break the ice of like, I'm getting an interview and I need to say, you know, and I'm like, it's really a weird sentiment to be interviewed. So to break that ice usually helps to get them in their space. So if they can show you what they do, that's also a really good leap, because when they are showing you their work or what they do, they are more comfortable and they sometimes get carried away in a good way, that they, you know, go deeper and you sit back and take all that information in and try to place it. As you were saying, having another person is great, because when you get an overload of information, it sometimes happens that you touch a point that just drops a lot of things. Like, they just mention a lot of interesting points and you are picking two or three, maybe the other person picks another two or three, and then or helps you, guide you, or at least or brings a question from the outside, let's say, to complete what you were saying. I think as a beginner, like, if you're starting out, please do the more structured approach. If you are starting out, you need a helping hand, you need a guide, you probably need structure, you probably need to know when to wrap it up, when to move to the next step. I am by nature very intuitive with whatever comes with it, you know, good and bad, but I am very intuitive. So I feel like I like to play to my strength, and my strength is I'm curious, which I feel is like the superpower that I have. I'm making commas in the air for those that are not watching. Like, I like that approach of like being just curious, having a guide. Like, I know what I need to talk about, but then again, I've done this a few times already, so I know kind of how to navigate this situation. And I really love doing it. So it's really, yeah, I have fun doing it. And I think I can pivot it during the interview quickly and easily, because if someone mentions something that touches a nerve on my brain, that like, oh, that's new or that's unexpected, then I can pivot really fast and forget about my plan, because that's more interesting than, because I've talked with four people already. I know where this is going if I keep going following the plan, but this person just mentioned something that's really unique. So scratch the plan, follow this path, follow the rabbit hole, and more often than not, you'll find something really, really interesting. So that's my approach. It's not scientific method approach. It's really like, you know, this is a person that does something or needs to do something on a daily basis or whatever, and they know how they use it, they know how they do it, and if you dig it deep enough, you'll find things that they never thought about, right? You probably, as a designer, you probably never thought too much about how you use Figma, for example, but if someone from Figma interviewed you, you probably would find things that you never thought, like, oh, I never thought about this, that's an interesting question, let me think about that, and so it's a discovery for both sides. And I, you know, I have some projects that I really like, not because they were successful. Actually, one of them was not successful at all. But the discovery side of those projects was really, really cool, because what they were trying to do was very out of the box, sometimes a bit counterintuitive, as in the market doesn't seem to follow this idea or whatever. But that's really, really exciting to get into that place where you're like, okay, so how do you go about doing this? In this case, it was like renting houses and stuff like that. So how do you go? And finding out, you know, what's actually behind those decisions of what's your emotional state during this part. And you don't need to ask it, because it just transpires from the way and the adjectives they use and the words and the body language. So you'll notice like, oh, this is a frustrating point. This is a pain point for them, obviously. So sometimes people say, oh, I hate this. But like, they say it in a way, but then it's, oh, yeah, I really don't like. Oh, yeah, that was crazy. So it, sometimes the word hate might be stronger, but the way they reacted to something else was like, oh, no, this is actually your pain point. Like, this was the moment where you actually felt either you were not empowered to do something, either the power, you know, the power to act was taken away from you. So that was very impactful. I don't know, we could talk about this all day, but I think the overall idea for me is, yeah, if you're starting out, yeah, please read, please apply the numerous guides that are in the internet that are really well written and really well prepared and to help you, you know, put your feet on the sand and try to walk a bit. But I think the more you do, I'm not saying do it like I do at all, but the more I do it, the more I feel comfortable. and the more I feel like I need no, I want to be unrestrained. I want to be like free. And I do, I like to do a lot. So if I could do 10 in a session, like, okay, we have this discovery goal. If I could do 10 interviews, I would love to do them. There's always that question like, oh, does it get repetitive? Sure. If you don't change it, but you should change it. You should, like, if you're getting 5 interviews done and you feel like you're getting the same thing over and over, if you go to the 6th interview and you do the same, following the same guidelines and doing the same kind of routine, you'll probably get the same results or similar. So shake it up a bit. I don't remember where I read that, but it was like, yeah, just be controversial in a question. Just bring them out of the scope of what they're doing. Like, okay, so can you walk me through, like, maybe let's open up the competitor, or let me show you something and let me know what you think about this. So shaking things up and being controversial in a way can be cool. Like stepping out of the plan. It might not go into something that's useful, of course. It can be just, oh yeah, okay, this didn't lead us to nowhere. But sometimes that can spark different conversations and can sharpen you up. Because that's one other problem, is that at some point, if you start getting the same things over and over, you start tuning out. So even for yourself, to keep yourself engaged, bringing a hot topic or putting the question in a controversial or more challenging way, if that makes sense, can be a good way to shake things up and move the needle a bit more. But yeah, that's how I plan.
Yeah, but when you are like hearing things like the similar things over and over again, doesn't that mean as well that you are getting to the point and that you are understanding what you need to understand?
I'm very skeptical that I got it right. I usually assume I didn't.
Okay.
And if I get the same thing over and over, I feel like my questions are just banal. No two people are the same. Even if the job to be done is the same, the way they go about it is different and the way they express it should be different. So if they're saying the same thing, maybe they're not talking about, you know, the emotional side of the job to be done and, or, you know, the actual intricacies of it. They are probably just giving me the superficial, everyone fits in this shoe kind of response. So I try to go to the individual the most. We had a project that allowed us to talk with, you know, influencers, so people who are working on the digital world and they have communities and stuff. So that was really exciting because that's a very emotional, very personal space, because these people kind of share a bit of their lives and it's very much their life and their work is the same in a way. So that was really cool because there were no two similar. Obviously, there were patterns. Yes, a lot of them. But they were not being said in the same terms or in the same pattern. And so it was like, oh, but how did you go? They did this and then they got to a point where they did that. Sure, but their stories were very different. And how they felt about those moments and how they felt about the challenges were different. Because someone, maybe they didn't have the struggle like the other person did. They had a problem in scaling up, or this person had a problem in understanding how to pivot and blah, blah, blah. But at the end, if you look at the pattern, we see it. Okay, so you start like this, then you get to this point, then here you start pivoting to something else. You could, if you're after 6 or 7, you could see the pattern. But every single one of those interviews was felt very personal and very unique. As in, I talk to this person because it's their life, honestly. Most of these people are talking like life and work is kind of meshed up. So it's very easy to get to an emotional point. When I mean emotional, it's not people crying. It's like when it's a personal stake, they have a personal stake in that question. It's like, okay, you're talking about something that changed my life. So I'm very excited to talk about that. And by the way, it was really hard. So let me tell you why it was hard. And you kind of just sit back a lot of the times and you're just listening to someone talk about their life and how they evolved and the struggles. And that's kind of what you, at a first glance, like if you're starting out a project, you want to build something for those people, but you don't know where to find the right space for your product to exist and to bring value. Yeah, that was a great example of something that was like, oh, wow, we just need to let them speak because this is so personal to them that they are not giving us the general superficial answers. They are really going into, oh, that was a really, you know, big moment for me. You know, that happened almost out of accident. But then you start hearing and it's like, it's not an accident. It's, you know, you did something here and there. And it's really, really cool. if you get to that point. It's really hard, by the way, just to throw that out there, because I know you had that experience, to get to this point when you're talking about financial products. That's one of my takeaways, is that I really struggle. We do it. We have success doing it. It's all right. But it's, for me, it's really hard to talk with someone about a financial product, because it's a hard topic and it's very vague sometimes. And it's really hard to get to the nerves. And it's like, oh, yeah, so you want to make more money. That's it. So it's a very banal thing. So that's one of the hardest topics for me to cover. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you add Web3, it's even worse, because it's a crowd that is usually very private and they don't want to share a lot. So yeah, as you know, I've done interviews to Web3 users in the past, and it's really hard in that sense, because it's like, it's sensitive information for everyone, and in this area even more, because people are very private and are very afraid of sharing how they do things and how they approach products and so on. So yeah, and which products they use and so on. Yeah, it's really hard. And you touched a point there that I want to know if you have some tips about it, because in our case, we usually work a lot with startups. So we starting the product, so we don't have users, we don't have anything. Have you struggled with that in the past, in the sense that you don't have users actually using a product, your product? So how do you recruit them? I know that recruitment of users is usually a pain, even more for a startup, and even more so in Web3. Because, for instance, you talked about like the renting product that you worked on. It's kind of a use case that, okay, you don't have users. However, like everyone rents a place, or it's easy for you to understand like the patterns that people usually follow, because it's a thing that everyone does. When it comes to Web3, it's a little bit more different. Do you have some tips to share about how to approach this?
Yeah. So the first time I ran a research session or sessions on Web3, I used the same tool that I used for that renting startup, which was userinterviews.com. Basically, you can set the requirements and they'll find people and they'll bring you people and you can evaluate them, and then you move, select the ones you want to move forward. And that's it. You just pay X, like $50 a voucher on Amazon or whatever. So you have to pay the people for their time. And that gives you two things. So first, you can actually filter and look at profiles. And obviously, the more niche, you'll find less people, but they will be more targeted. they'll fit the target a bit more. This is a big topic, so I'll try to focus on this. So it's like, okay, I get the profiles, I look at them, I can evaluate them. This also means that I'll get people that have done this a lot. So that helps me. I got people that done this a lot, that have done a lot of user interviews. This is a question I usually make it in the beginning, like, have you done any of this? And when they say, yeah, sure, I've done a bunch, it's usually great. They speak out loud immediately. You don't need to say anything. They are very much, they expand their thoughts, they kind of know the point of why they're there a lot better. So it's very intuitive for most of these people to engage in the conversation with you. And they bring these anecdotes, they bring these because they know you are kind of looking for something. So they try to be very expansive in the way they talk, and that's usually helpful. So in the renting project, we had some things that we knew. So this was something that was supposed to happen in Boston, particularly, you know, in that academia zone of the, like, university and blah, blah, blah. So there was a niche already there, because it's a very specific market in Boston, which is seasonal, because every year, you know, the market starts up again because people leave, people come in. So there's a lot of things that we knew already that allowed us to talk with people who either were landlords or renting houses in Boston. They used a lot of tools to do it. And we talked about those tools. We talked about what their concerns were and stuff like that. And yeah, you saw like, yeah, this is a group of people that is interacting with each other. We talked with landlords, we talked people who rent, and you could see like the dynamics really well. On Web3, it's tricky. As you know, we've done it in a project that we started a few years ago, which was Utrust. And back then, it was even harder, I think, than it is today, because a lot of people that were, what we did, if you remember, was like, okay, let's go to our Discord, because these people follow the project. So they are interested in knowing what we're doing. So let's talk with them, right? Let's go through our Discord, bring these. I remember we asked, I don't know, someone from the community management side on our side, to hand pick a few people and stuff like that. Like those who are more interactive, that you feel are more engaged with us, let's bring them to a conversation. And then at some point we started expanding. And when we started expanding, we started getting no shows. We started getting people that had no idea even how Web3 worked at all, or what they just cared about the pump and dump. So yeah, Web3 can bring a lot of weird situations. I think now doesn't happen that much or at all. We are curating the audience a bit more. And then, of course, it's trying to find the target. You usually define that before. Well, usually you define that beforehand, but you usually get something right, but not everything. So maybe we shouldn't be more specific next time we interview, because this person didn't actually fit, or this was a different profile, not exactly this profile. It was interesting, but it's another profile. So let's forget about that profile and focus on this one. But I would say it's usually very much informed from the design thinking frameworks that we use to allow us to say, who's this for? What are you solving? What is the job to be done? Who are these people? Mm-hmm. Who are these people? What are they doing, and where can we find them?
Yeah, I was going to say that, in Web3, the community is a great ally. It really is. Like in the projects that I have been, I think in Web3, usually you have the Web3 community, but usually also I have, like, if you have like a marketing plan and people are aware of what you are trying to do, or you have a token launch or whatever, you already have like a community that can help you do this. I also think that you need to be mindful about the people you ask to these interviews, because sometimes they are very pumped about the product and they are a little bit biased in the sense they kind of tell you what you want to hear. You know, like they say, yeah, that's really cool, let's do that, I really like, and they try to, you can be misled by these types of users. So I think you need to be mindful of that and try to diverge and find other people to do interviews with, and you will have a lot of no-shows and have, like you mentioned, but yeah, I think even so, it's a great ally to have a community in that sense.
To start it off, Joanna, I would say to start it off, it's okay. Yeah. But if you go there and think like that's where I'll find the answers, you're wrong. Those people come with an expectation. Yes. They know what they're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. They have personal stake in that, as they probably have tokens, they probably whatever. So those are people that can get you off to a basic understanding of their expectations and what they've used and why are they here and all of that stuff. But eventually you want to get out of your bubble really quick, because your bubble is your bubble. It's very much biased from the get-go. So you won't actually learn that much from your community. It will allow you to kick it off, to get a temperature check and stuff like that. And what are you using? What else is interesting? Blah, blah, blah. But then you need to get out of your bubble really quick. Otherwise, you're wrong. You're getting biased in answers.
Yeah, for sure. And I can give an example exactly on NewTrust that I was in. Like, and I think it was like my first research project that I ever done. So I was really new at it. And it was kind of a failure in the sense that, like I said, I was new. So I think I could have dug a little bit more on that topic. And I know that we implemented like one or two things that, like I said, I talked with these users, like these very pumped users that were like really excited about the product. And they, in my view of it at the time, they validated what we needed to do. So it was a yes to implement some features, and then it was a failure because no one used it. I got the sense that they were going to be used. So yeah, that's very easy to happen if you are talking with these type of people.
Saying yes is very easy. Saying yes is really easy. So yeah, going out of your zone, like going to people that don't even know what the yes is better. Don't even know why they're being interviewed. Don't even know what's the purpose of the whole outcome of this interview. What is it? I don't know. That's great. If you say come with an expectation, then there's a bias immediately. I would like also to talk, because we could talk about this for a long time, but there's also one thing we would like to talk about in this episode, which is presenting research. I don't know, what are your thoughts and what you would like to share about that? Because obviously that also depends on the stakeholders and the context and who are you going to present to and what stage are you in and stuff like that. But what would you say are your go-to tools how you do it?
Yeah, I think in our case, it's not that hard in the sense that we usually work in small teams. So, for instance, if I'm working in a project, because we are usually more present in the 0 to 1 phase of the project. So we usually have like a designer, a product manager, and a few developers, right? So, and we have like the founder and a few stakeholders, but the team is not that big. So usually my go-to strategy is to like present it in a meeting. I have an interview and then I just present the findings that I have in those meetings. I usually do a presentation or something just to, with like the main findings, not something very exhaustive, but something just so people understand, okay, we talked with these users, we did these questions, and now what they answered was like the pattern was this, and then we can share. But I know that sometimes this is not that easy to do if the company is bigger. When I was at UTrust, I know that I did other stuff, it wasn't that easy to share because, yeah, the team was big. The product team itself, I think it was like 15 people, so just the product team. So it was not that easy. I remember I once did like kind of a presentation for people to see it on their own. And I tried to do it like a comic book so people would get engaged. So because sometimes like when you are in a product team, for you, you know that this is super important and you are trying to understand your users and you know the value in it. But sometimes, like, not the case that's a visual, I think, but sometimes, for instance, a developer doesn't see the point of he needing to understand this information. So at the point, I know that my struggle with this one. But I know that you also did something like video, right?
Yeah, I usually try to...
Yeah, how do you do it?
I usually try to bring the interviews to the presentation, meaning the typical thing of showing quotes. And so to make a point, like you make a point, like you interpret the data that you got and you show it. But then to illustrate it, I like to clip videos and put the videos and let them hear it in the first person by the user. For me, that's just absolutely critical that I know some people are more educated to this and they'll trust what you're saying and all of that stuff. But honestly, hearing it in the first person, someone saying something, it's more powerful than you saying, you know, I talked, you know, this is what we got. And it's, for me, it's more powerful to say, this is what you got and listen to this. So this is what, listen to this phrase. And maybe I say, we got this information and or we inferred, we assume this from this piece of answers, from this group of answers, we assume this is the pain, let's say. So, and then listen to what they're saying and get them to hear it and get them to hear the tone of voice, get them to hear the words. It's also very useful for marketing to get the first person quotes, like to hear what they said, because actually a lot of slogans and marketing work is just literally adjusting some words from real users about real projects and stuff like that, because it's the cleanest way. It's like straight from the fountain. Like when you get someone to actually nail why they use something and why they like something, it's hard for a copy person to do better than, yeah, they can adjust it, they can make it cleaner, but the source of truth is there. So yeah.
It makes total sense. And one of the pains that I had in the past was like showing founders or product owners that there are more to it than what they already know. Because usually, and it's, that's normal. Like people, when they come to us, they have done their research, they have talked to people, but they are not user researchers, right? So sometimes they have like biased ideas of things. And I think that's really useful for actually showing them someone saying what we are saying. I think it helps making them see that, okay, I have this opinion, I have this assumption, but maybe there's more to it than I already know. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Makes total sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would say always end with next steps. So this is what we learned. This is what's next. So this isn't done. So always leave the pointer to where you're going next. Like, this is what we got. This is what we're going to do. And by the way, this is what we still need to. So after these conversations, we feel like these are the new things that we need to explore. We got these new directions that we need to navigate towards. Mm-hmm. So I always end up with next steps. And if there was a tip that I would say, like a beginner concern, is don't do research to validate your own bias or your own ideas. Don't do research because you want to prove the stakeholder is wrong and you're right. If you do that, you're doing a disservice to yourself and the product and everyone in the team. You should go in curious and expecting to be wrong and hoping you're wrong, because that's you're learning. If you go into an interview and you come out and say, they said exactly what I wanted, you said it. You did everything to make sure that they said what you wanted, that I can guarantee you. You don't know. And particularly in the beginning, you don't know. You're just going to go in. You have your assumptions, of course. You probably worked on a bunch of those assumptions with the stakeholder and the designers and the developers and the PM and whatever. And you add your assumptions based on your assumptions. If you are a creative person, you start imagining, no, this could be great. This could be cool. But then the stakeholder has a different vision. And you start saying, oh, yeah, we'll see on the research. And then you go and you hope that they just validate your idea. You're doing a bad job there. You shouldn't do that. You should go there clean slate. You have assumptions to validate. You shouldn't have a favorite son, a favorite goal or a favorite topic. You should go there like, what can I learn? And I did that mistake in the past. I remember saying it like, it's a good way for you to show stakeholders, like, you know, from the user's mouth that, you know, this is not working and that's not good at all. Like, doesn't work. Is misleading. You probably manipulated unconsciously the conversation to go your way. So yeah, if at all possible, try to go into it with no real contender in that fight. If there's a fight, like if it's, we have this idea and the stakeholder has this and you go there and you try to, yeah, just go as a freelancer. You don't know anything about, you don't care about what's right. You just want to know what's their thought, what's the user's idea. And that's why, by the way, I like to do interviews in projects that I'm not working on. So if I can go to a project, you are working on a project and you and Alvaro, you know, prepare, you know, the topics and kind of bring me into it and say, you know, these are the things we care about, blah, blah, blah. These are basically assumptions. That's great because I have no bias. I don't care about what you think or your preconceived notion of what should be the answer or we think it's going to be like this. I don't care. I don't have it. I haven't been a part of that discussion. So I just go in there and just talk with the person about the things that we should talk about. And it obviously helps. And it's important that you have some context, but you wouldn't have a bias because you don't have a stake in that. I didn't share my ideas. I didn't even have ideas. I just, you know, have a job. I have a goal. I have the user. I have the context. And that's it. That's a great way to do it. Obviously, we don't do that much, but when I've done it and it's cleaner, it feels cleaner, probably harder as well, because I, you know, then I have to work a bit more to get into that comfortable state in the interviews. Like to be comfortable with the topic, you need to do a bit more research or a bit more pre-work than I usually do because I'm usually in the project. So I have all the context. So if I come from the outside, it takes a bit more prep work in that sense, but it's really clean. Yeah, and I just remember that tip that I think I gave you at some point. It's like, I like to go into these things and say, by the way, I know very little about this project. I don't work in this project. I was just hired to interview people and blah, 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 or user test this. I have no stake. You can be very honest. And if you ask me a question, I probably won't answer because I don't know. So we will see. Because I like to be, I think that's the perfect spot is to be an outsider. You are an outsider, you are as curious as they are, and you're just going along with the ride with them. You're not in a position where you're like taking notes, look at them, everything they say, that's not a great place to be. That's not a good conversation. So I like to be closer.
Yeah, I think we've talked about in the other episode, if I'm not mistaken, that we like people in that way. I think I've never done it, but you told me that at that time, because people don't have to please you, right? If you are an outsider, you don't have to like apply to what
yeah, they that can people be free saying, so, yeah. to say what they want. They won't hurt your feelings because you don't care. You have no stake in it. So yeah, exactly. Bash it away. That's the perfect scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we are focusing this episode in interviews, right? Because that's mostly what we do at SunVisual. I'm not sure if we should tackle this topic. Maybe this could be another topic for another episode of Click and Have It in Blue, that is methodology, because there are a lot of other methods that you can choose to do research. So maybe this is for another episode, because I think we have a lot to say. Yeah,
not for us.
Yeah. Yeah,
honestly,
but interviews,
like, let's be honest, we do interviews and we do user tests. And when we do user tests, we always do interviews because we don't want to, you know, waste the opportunity to do them. So, yeah, there are a bunch of things you can do. I think we could probably bring someone that can talk about that. But I think from our experience, if we are honest, like exactly. That's what we do 90% of the time is interviews, talk with people.
Yeah.
That's our way of entering in the stage and getting to know the audience and stuff like that. Yeah, there are a bunch of other tools.
Yeah, also because of our way of working, right? Because we work a lot with startups and with very early stages products. So I think for us, it makes total sense because we are in the phase that we are trying to understand the users and the role and the job. So it makes total sense for us to do it. And if you are starting out again, like interviews, it's the way to go because I think it's the way. There's nothing like an interview. You can do like surveys and you can think that you are asking the right questions and you will get a lot of information, but it's really superficial because you can't like go deep as we discussed throughout this episode. Like you can't go as deep as you go in interviews. So yeah.
It's different goals as well. Like if you are A/B testing on a product that, you know, you can bring 100,000 users and show them something and it's A or B and you'd go like, okay, so 650 people chose A. We that's not the kind of project we are usually, or not the stage of the project that we are usually talking about. We are usually talking about a stage where there's no user yet. There's
exactly.
A goal, there's an audience. We feel that, like that's the target audience and that's where we should move. So we don't have that like surveys. We don't usually have even the numbers for it to make sense. And not even going through, as you were saying, there different kind of outcomes from a survey than from an interview. But I am a very big believer in that if you talk to 5 people that fit the bill, that make sense for your product, you will get crazy amounts of inputs and pointers. You won't, you know, solve it in the first 5-6 interviews. But if you do 5 or 6, you will jump from where you were to another level very quickly. You start on a project, you know very little about it. You go through interviews and it's like, okay, so I kind of get it now. And it's not like you got it, but you, okay, I get the picture a bit. And I can start working it out and I'll have more questions and more focused questions for the future. But I know, I think the feeling of like, I'm starting on a project. This is very blurry. This is very weird. I don't know exactly where we're going. I don't know what's valuable, what's the user actually doing and valuing and blah, blah, blah. We are very used to being in the place. And after a few rounds of interviews, I'm in another place. It's a total, I'm not saying it's decided. Absolutely not. I'm not saying we know exactly where we're going. Absolutely not. But I'm in a very different position.
But we know better.
In a very different position. We know a lot better.
Yeah.
And we know better the questions that make sense and the things we need to learn. We know a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have to leave it for now, I would say, please do interviews.
Yes.
If you do it wrong, you are doing it. So that's a good thing. At least don't, you're starting. Just don't make the mistake of thinking you got everything right in the beginning and everything that you got is a validation and blah, blah, blah. So if you're starting out, probably made mistakes. It's all right. But just start.
And
just
practice.
Really, just start.
Start and practice. Yeah. Do a lot of them. They won't go well. All of them won't go well, but it will be worth it for sure. So yeah.
Okay, so that's the time we have. We could talk about this topic for a lot longer, and that's why we'll do several episodes on this topic. We will drop some links because we mentioned a few. There are more than we talked about that we can share, so we'll share some things in the link. And I hope you liked it, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.